Once again, I'd like to welcome you to High Performance Computing for the Masses. Now, without further delay, I'd like to turn today's live meeting over to your first presenter, Norma McKinney. She is the Senior Product Manager with the High Performance Computing Group. Norma, you have the floor.
Thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And we're thrilled to have you join us with one of our most strategic partners here at Microsoft Intel Corporation to hear our webcast this morning. I want to introduce you to our first speaker from Intel, Mark Spadal. Mark reports to Richard Draycott, who's the general manager for the HPC group within Intel's server product group. HPC was identified 2 years ago as a key growth area for Intel server products. Mark is responsible for formulating and executing the worldwide HPC strategy for the HPC volume and ecosystem space. Mark's title is Platform Strategist, Ecosystem, Volume, Intel High Performance Computing. So with that, let me just turn it over to my colleague, Mark Spadal, and I trust you'll enjoy the next hour with our Intel team. Mark, take it away.
Thank you, Norma, and hello to everybody out there. Thank you very much for allocating an hour to participate with us. On your screens, you should be see the title page. This is for HPC for the masses. I'm going to take us through very quickly a legal disclaimer. Yes, Intel has lawyers, and today we're going to be presenting some information on some future performance. And while we can't share that information with you that you can keep the copies, we do want to give you some indication of some things that will be coming out very shortly. Slide number 3 is the agenda that myself and my colleague, George Chaltis, will be participating in today. What we'd like to do is set up not only our vision of the HPC marketplace, but also as it's observed by industry analysts and other participants. And then like you to give you a specific perspective of Intel in HPC, how and where we're focusing our attention. The third category is the importance of balanced clusters and why we think that Intel partnered with Microsoft offers some unique differentiation. It's not just hardware, it's not just software, it's actually the balanced environment between those two that's very important. And then finally, to give you some perspective into the Microsoft Intel HPC collaboration and what we would term some differentiation as well. Slide number 4, this will be the template that we use to show you the transitions as we're going to each category. So, for example, we're going to be covering HPC in the marketplace. This slide is our interpretation of IDC High Performance Computing organization that does a lot of analysis every year. The top of the pyramid will be those very largest computer systems that will be installed in academia, national labs, and so forth. The red area focus on what they term as capacity, and a lot of these are done by priced bandwidth. So the matrix within the bottom of the pyramid shows some of those pricing breakpoints. If you start at the very bottom row, those indicate what they call work group computing environments. The next level would be departmental, and then finally that third level would be defined as divisional clusters. On the right-hand side, I just want to call out some relevant things, I think, for both HPC for the masses and hopefully for our audience as well. Some of the key things is a lot of these are targeted at under 150 nodes. The other thing that is clearly indicated in this category is the commercialization of HPC, and that's indicated by the higher percentage of ISV applications for specific vertical markets. So the indications point to fast growth within commercial high-performance computing. And that bottom banner indicates from IDC in working with their server group that roughly about 20% of all CPUs sold worldwide actually go into a high-performance computing deployment. I want to give a perspective that HPC is really touching our personal world almost every single day, whether you use a product that you buy at a store, whether you drive your car, ride a bus or ride an airplane. Simulation, in a lot of ways, has replaced the physical environment. So just to give some real-life categories, on the left-hand side, saving lives, the utilization of HPC simulations to do drug discovery or computational chemistry or the back-end gene sequencing that is currently being done. In terms of finding oil in the energy environment, high-performance computing simulation is used both in discovery of oil for the seismic analysis, as well in the reservoir environment to optimize the extraction of oil from the earth. And then the trading faster, a lot of those are based on algorithms to go ahead and do specific trading opportunities to do real-time pricing. Some might argue that they didn't have enough enough trading environment, or it was not used correctly. The main thing I'd like to point out here is that what we're seeing is HPC is coming from the traditional HPC that was in academia and national labs, and they actually carved the way for how HPC could use both in terms of the algorithms and as well as being used in clusters. And then it's moving down into the commercialization. And even further, we're seeing it moved into more of the volume space where it's more readily available across the board. So this is kind of leads into some of the changing demographics. So where the primary driver at the top end of the most largest, highest HPC computers is now moving from performance to productivity is important, is time to develop a drug, time to analyze where oil might be. The other environment or demographic that's changing is it's moving from very large clusters or HPC environments, moving down into the organization into either departmental or work group clusters. And the other exciting thing is that HPC, because of its commercialization, is now becoming available and of more interest to people who've never used HPC before. I cite an important study that was done by the Council on Competitiveness. This is referenced at the bottom. They did a study of desktop technical computing in terms of productivity. And these are just some statistics that are indicative of the appetite for HPC. So 57% have problems that they can't solve today. And then 53% actually scale down problems just to fit on the desktops, that if they had another computing environment, they might exercise the algorithms or the science in a different way. The last one is most important, is one of the biggest increases of productivity is the ability to move from creating a physical environment to a simulated environment that actually replicates the physical world, because that can dramatically increase your productivity. However, there are some challenges with that. There are some barriers that were also cited by this study. One is the availability of software. Two is people capable of deploying and supporting high-performance computing environments. And the third one is the perceived cost. All these are currently being addressed, and this is some of the things that we'll talk about as we move forward. So looking at HPC today, this is a synopsis of these studies and also our own personal interaction with both partners and users. Users at this level and in this demographic, they really just want a tool to get their job done. They're looking that has flexibility and scalability, and also that it's easy to implement, deploy, and support. And ultimately, they're after simplicity. You could almost call this, they're looking for the same type of capability or deployment ease and simplicity as an enterprise server. I'm going to transition to the second topic, which is Intel's specific perspective of what we're doing in HPC. This is our vision, and I'm not going to walk through each of these, but this is a strategy and a vision that has been in place for 2 years, and it has remained very consistent. The only thing that has changed is some of our tactics in terms of executing against this vision. We definitely want to maintain a technology leadership, and we feel that we are in an advantageous place to do that. We want to drive valuable technology pipeline, and what that means for the space that I focus on, which is the volume, is I can leverage what our R&D folks are doing in the high end and how that makes itself evident through manufacturing HPC capabilities directly into the silicon. These are some of the categories within Intel that are actually working on high-performance computing. So I referenced the high end, which would be your upper left-hand quadrant, which is the Terascale Research Program. So this is basic R&D in some very futuristic HPC capabilities. The manufacturing process is one of Intel's engine that allows us to produce silicon chips and chipsets in high volume. For all of our silicon, we are always pushing performance and performance per watt. If you move to the second row on the left-hand side, this is where some of the differentiation that I believe that Intel can deliver around software. So we have software tools that are purely focused on clustered environments or parallelization. We also do software, hardware testing for our partners, which would be ISVs. And then finally, we actually have defined some HPC application platforms. I wanted to give some indication of Intel's current position. These are two statistics that I think are give some perspective of that. The top one on the left is the top 500. These are the top 500 HPC implementations as they're registered by the top 500 organizations. And for 2 years in a row, Intel has been proud to be able to support over 75% of the world's fastest computers. The second graph indicates of all those shipments of CPUs into the HPC environment, four out of every five of those is an Intel-based processor. I talked about the importance of Intel to HPC, and one thing I didn't mention is Intel has our own market models that we look at our server and our growth areas. And HPC, in our own market models, contributes 20% of the total CPU volume for Intel. What that means is one out of every five processors is going to an HPC environment. That allows us to have some influence on the silicon and the CPUs that come out of Intel. What we're going to talk a little bit about today is one of the first iterations of that, of this new environment called Nehalem, was specifically designed with some capabilities that are directly related to the HPC environment, and some of those key bullets are on the right-hand side that directly impact high-performance computing, specifically in memory-constrained environments. This is that Nehalem product, and it talks about some of the very specific HPC benefits that were explicitly designed into this environment. And as you'll see when I transition to George and he talks about the software balancing, of how the combination of the hardware and the software actually offers some significant performance breakthroughs. How does Intel focus in this space in terms of HPC? Well, if we really truly believe that it's the commercial environment that will start to drive some of this, it's important that we have the right software partners, because that's typically why folks like yourself will buy a platform. It's because the software actually solves a business problem for you. So this portfolio that you're looking at here, that's actually broken down into various vertical segments, indicates the specific ISVs or software partners that Intel has had an engineering-to-engineering relationship with for over 3 years. This is both in developing their new software environment so it's parallelized to take advantage of the new hardware capabilities, and secondly, once that code is developed, to tune and optimize that environment specifically on an Intel platform. So this will be relevant as I transition into George so that he can talk about some of the balanced environment and how that actually impacts performance. So George, if I might, I now have the slide up to transition over to you to talk about the importance of the software side of having a balanced HPC system.
Thank you very much and good morning. We're going to start first with an overview that compares the performance of the next generation Nehalem processor with our current processors. And I need to explain how this chart is organized so that you can make it clear. Anyway, going forward, the yellow line across is a normalization line. It was measured on a system with A and B processors in it. They happen to be 2.3 gigahertz Barcelonas. Those are not their current best products, but they were available to us when we did this in my lab. Just so you know, the systems here, all these results were done on a single server configured with two quad-core processors and 16 to 24 gigabytes of memory. These are all multi-threaded or multi-process applications. Many of them are, in fact, can be run on clusters, but again, we're running on a single node. And if there are eight cores in the node, which there are, we are running eight processes. The red bar is the next generation Nehalem processor at 2.93 gigahertz. The gray bar is our current Intel Xeon processor at 3 gigahertz. And you can see for a number of applications, the applications are listed in little black letters there. The new one is sometimes as much as twice as fast. We won't go into the details as to why that is too much today, but if you recall a couple of slides back, Mark showed you the architecture of the new Nehalem servers, and he made a note that memory bandwidth is greatly increased. That's a large part of what was going on here. One of the problems that shows up in a lot of high-performance computing applications is it uses a lot of memory bandwidth. I'm sorry, I jumped ahead of slide. And as we add more cores, we've needed to increase the memory bandwidth available to applications. The applications below, these numbers are actually aggregates of multiple workloads for each of these applications. And you can see them in a number of the vertical segments Mark showed. Now I'll go to the next slide. This is a little bit of a different view. We've now done aggregate scaling by application segment. So you can see, for instance, in the middle with a scaling of 1.72, this is for computer aided engineering. Over on the left, you see Linpack that's roughly equal to the current Xeon processor. That's because Linpack actually doesn't do much with memory bandwidth at all. It's mostly constrained by the core frequency. And in fact, this new processor, 2.3 gigahertz, it has a slightly slower core frequency than the one we're comparing to at 3.2. On the other hand, at the right-hand side, you can see that Stream, which is in fact intended to measure memory bandwidth, gets a 3.5 times improvement, or rather performs 3.5 times as much in memory bandwidth. And this is a large reason that so many of the other applications and areas you see here are a good deal faster.
Hey George, if I can just make a quick comment because I think it's important in terms of the silicon and the platform and the balanced software.
Mm-hmm.
The Nehalem product was specifically designed to address some of those memory constrained environments. And the previous chart actually indicated that where you had the widest performance improvements are typically characterized, those verticals are typically characterized as having more memory bandwidth requirements.
Absolutely, and you see that especially in that slide in weather, energy, and computer-aided engineering. That's absolutely correct. Thank you. Now a little bit of a, not very detailed bit of history here, but we want to talk about the sort of disruption that happened as we started making multiple cores available in A, inexpensively, and B, in single servers. So for a long, long time, which in the slide here we represent as the gigahertz era, or actually the megahertz, not that long, it goes back that far, typical processor had one core. A typical server had one processor, or maybe two. So there wasn't a lot of parallel, effective performance parallelization possible within a single server. Clustering was being developed at the time, but not too many applications were able to make effective use of it. And so the primary way of increasing performance was to buy a processor with a faster core. And I know when I joined Intel, I think our fastest product was at about a 300 megahertz Pentium 2. These days, we're roughly 10 times that in frequency at 3 gigahertz or so. But in addition to doing that, we've, of course, been adding increasing the number of cores. So now a common processor has 4 cores. There are some with 6 and some in other markets with even more, and there will be more in the future. This has a huge impact, a big disruption, not so much on the users, but on the folks developing software. You now have a lot more compute resources available to you, although the speed of the individual resources is not increasing, or not increasing as quickly as it used to, I should say. It's very easy to go from 2 cores to 4 cores, for instance, or 4 cores to 6 cores without increasing the frequency of the processor much. But this means that to increase the performance available to users, software developers have to increase the parallelism in their solutions. And they can do that both within a single processor, within a server, and across clusters of servers. And we're going to talk a little bit about the challenges of doing that and some of the tools to help do that in just a moment. So we're going to here. Okay. So if you start with the simplest thing, it's then the easiest thing for us to do when we're expressing an algorithm to solve a problem is to just do some kind of serial sequence of do step one, step two, step three, and so on. And for a long time, this is how high-performance computing programs were written. But as multi-core became and clusters became commonly available, and ISVs started to change to parallel programming, they've had to rethink how things are done, which means your data may have to be laid out differently. Your algorithms may have to actually consider different parts of the problem independently. And ultimately, you may have to look at how multiple servers cooperate together to solve the problem, you know, as in clusters, which are, of course, there's I'm going to mangle the name of the product, but Microsoft has a new OS release that has clustering built into it. And that can go a long way to solving much more complex problems. But it's not just a matter of having the OS and the basic cluster model. Just like you have to worry about things like memory bandwidth within a server, making sure you have enough to support the number of cores and processes you're running. In a cluster, you have to look at your interconnect and how effective it is and how effectively it is used. And I'm going to show you an example of why that matters in the next slide. In this slide, in my lab on a cluster, we ran a CFD, that's a computational fluid dynamics application called Fluent, and we ran it on a number of cores. You can see 8, 16, 32, 64, and 128 cores. There's only 8 cores in a server, so that's 1, 2, 4, 6, and 1, 2, 4, 8, and 16 servers. What I've plotted here is scaling efficiency, so that as you double the number of cores, if your efficiency is 100%, then your application, your workload gets done twice as fast. The orange line shows what happens when we use gigabit Ethernet to connect the nodes in our cluster. You see, at a single node, we're at almost perfect efficiency. At two nodes, where it says 16, we're down just a little bit in the high 90s. But at four nodes, we're down to about 90%. At eight nodes, it's down to about 70%. And at 128 cores, which is 16 nodes, the efficiency is about 25%, which is pretty terrible. That means you've doubled your hardware costs, and you've gotten only about a 20% increase in performance for it, which is not at all a big value. Then we repeated the test. We used exactly the same software, exactly the same hardware, with one change. We switched from Ethernet interconnect to a dual data rate InfiniBand interconnect, and we plotted the same thing. And, of course, for a single node where you don't use interconnect at all, the value is the same. And you'll see that at 16, 32, at 64 processes, that's up to 8 nodes, scaling is essentially perfect. In fact, it's slightly better than perfect, and that's for some obscure reasons we won't go into right now. And it's not until we go to 16 nodes that scaling starts to drop off. So this is no difference in software cost. It's no difference in the processors or software versions or the problem definition. That's just the interconnect that's changed here. This shows how there's a number of factors that enter into getting the best performance and the best value out of your complete solution. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the software development process, and I'm going to go kind of fast here, and we'll talk a little bit about some tools to help with that.
If I can do a preface for that, George.
Sure.
While we the demographics that we're potentially targeting, it may not be the expectation that the buyers or the end users or the customers would necessarily be doing development. In fact, we would hope that you can find some of your business software from these ISVs. But the reason that we think it's important to appreciate the importance of the balanced software development and hardware is because this is exactly where George and his team work with the ISVs both on parallelization and tuning and optimization. So it's the ability to be able to analytically understanding what's happening with the application, the operating environment, and the hardware to be able to determine where those bottlenecks are so that we can assist the ISV to be able to break through those bottlenecks.
Thank you, Mark. In fact, I work in a department that has about 60 engineers that are dedicated to working with vendors of high-performance computing applications to improve the performance on servers with Intel processors, just as Mark said. And this is essentially the process we follow. So step one essentially is to analyze the application as it exists today, as it runs today, and to look for places where it spends lots of time and consider how to make those parallel. Right, realize that Amdahl's law essentially says that the parts that you don't parallelize won't get faster when you the parts that you don't spend any time with won't improve your overall performance if you parallelize them, because that's not where you're spending your time. Right, simple enough thing, but it's an important thing to keep in mind. The second step is to actually figure out how to introduce parallelism, and you can do that a number of ways. You can code threads by hand. You can use threaded libraries, threaded toolkits, and with certain compilers that implement threading primitives within the compilers, such as OpenMP, you can do it that way as well. Once you have something kind of working, you need to test it and check its correctness, and we have some tools that help with that. It's actually very hard to do this with brute force testing, none of them are just running problems. But there are tools that will do analysis of the code and go a long way to help making sure that it really is correct. Once it's correct and working, then we go back and look at its details of its performance and look for some very low-level things in the processor's interaction with the software to figure out how to improve it still further. And this last couple of steps you can repeat, the last three steps really, you can repeat multiple times to continue to improve performance. And in fact, this is exactly what we do. Over the years, we've worked with some of these software vendors to improve performance multiple times. So here, you see some of the tools that Intel's developer software department produces. There are also, of course, tools available from vendors such as Microsoft that work together with these tools. The first one is called VTune Performance Analyzer, and at the beginning, you would run this, and you could run other profiling tools as well to see where in the software time is actually being spent. The second group of boxes there shows tools that can be used to improve performance directly and to implement parallel solutions. So we have C++ and Fortran compilers. I should mention that those integrate into Visual Studio, and you use them together with Microsoft's development solution. This is not an independent development environment. MPI libraries, OpenMP implementations, cluster tools, and things of that sort. In the third box, this is for testing. Intel Thread Checker in a threaded application will actually go in and do a very specific analysis of not only the references to the data references that happen in a particular test, but the ones that could happen. And this will find things like data races and things, problems of that sort, and notify the developers so that they can remove bugs that no one has ever actually experienced. This is a really powerful and important tool. I personally have worked with a software vendor before we had this tool where they had a problem that would only show up about every 10th run or so of an application, even with the same data set, and finding it and debugging it took us weeks. And in the last stage, we use tools like Thread Profiler, which looks at the efficiency of threading, and VTune again, which will let us look at interactions between the software and the various pieces of hardware within the system. Things like, you know, are we missing cache? Are we saturating particular execution units and things of that sort? And this lets us do very low-level detailed optimizations and get some significant performance improvements again. So as an example of things that can be achieved using some of these tools, these are some quotes from customers who've used these tools, and also pointing out, you notice the first one where it says, upgrading from Intel compiler 7.1 and 8.1 to 9.1 got a 20% performance increase. This essentially speaks to not only that the compiler does a good job, I don't know if this customer is using Fortran or C++, but as we add features and performance to our processors, we update our compilers almost at the same time. So for instance, we just released, I think, the Core i7 processor for desktops, and we'll be releasing the Nehalem server processor early next year. And about the same time, we will release version 11 of our compilers, and it will understand these new processors in great detail and be able to generate the best possible code for them, better code than, for instance, the version 10 or version 9 processors do. And again, the second quote is from a customer who used VTune and was able to solve their problems very quickly. This is one of the very first things we do whenever we go to work directly with the software vendors to look at, you know, where is the time being spent and what does the system actually do at that point. At this point, I'm now going to turn it back over to Mark. And I'm clicking on the wrong mouse. Oh, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about how we work together with Microsoft.
So as George, we started out with some hardware perspective from a market perspective where Intel is focusing on HPC. We emphasize the stress and emphasis we put on the hardware platform. We then transitioned into to really unleash, as we're finding with multi and many core, to really unleash the power of the hardware, you have to have a balanced system with software. And George walked through some of the analytical steps and tools that we take in terms to implement parallelization with our partners and then to tune and optimize their environment to really achieve that balance and open up the hardware so it can perform at full throttle. If we expand that, you need an environment needs to be balanced from an operating system environment and then also from an HPC middleware environment, which would be your cluster middleware and your provisioning. And this is where we think, again, that Microsoft and Intel HPC collaboration offers some differentiation that you can't necessarily get elsewhere. And so the slide I have up now talks about some of the explicit engineering-to-engineering engagements that Microsoft and Intel have together, specifically on the operating system environment that Microsoft provides, and then also on the HPC environment, which is a layer that's integrated but above the Microsoft operating system. So these are three specific categories where we have explicit teams focusing on delivering optimization on Intel hardware via Microsoft operating system, which is Microsoft Windows, and the layer on top of that, HPC. The first one is just in pure performance in the Microsoft environment and being able to take advantage of the hardware, and vice versa, that our engineers can open up those doors in terms of the performance and assisting Microsoft and vice versa collaborative effort to achieve that. As we're all finding in data centers and even in external environments from the data centers, energy efficiency or price performance per watt is becoming increasingly important because of the capacities that are now required for computing. So there's a lot of collaboration between the operating system and the hardware environment to optimize this environment. And then in the RAS environment, there's a lot of effort around this area as well. Now, one of the things that is one of the biggest challenges is
in the software environment and actually developing parallelized code. That's a kind of it's a newer environment, and Intel and Microsoft have done a lot of effort in different areas, both working with commercial accounts and ISVs jointly for parallelized code, but even going back into the university environment to make sure that the educational institutions have the type of curricula and the resources so that we can introduce our next generation of software developers to explicitly develop software code that has tuning and optimization built into it. So if you think of it in terms of building blocks, you can see where all these things really start to fit together. From a hardware platform, from the raw CPU and those things that are built on silicon, if those can have HPC capabilities built in, that's an advantage. In terms of the operating system, to take advantage of those hardware environments and vice versa, those become increasingly important, especially along those three vectors, performance, energy efficiency, and RAS. Microsoft recently, this summer, had a major announcement with their HPC environment that dramatically improved some of the components of their provisioning, their MPI environment, that resulted in good improvements in overall HPC environment. So that's the next level. You have the operating system, and then you have the middleware. One of the unique advantages that Microsoft Windows and HPC has over other environments is it is inherently a holistic, monolithic, and integrated environment. So essentially, it's one source for both the operating system and the middleware components. That does offer some significant advantages. So again, it's the hardware, the operating system, the cluster middleware, and then on top of that, it's the joint efforts of actually working with specific ISVs in HPC, number one, to do parallelization, and number two, to do tuning and optimization. The result is getting toward what we think is a prerequisite, and that is having some having an integrated, balanced environment between hardware, operating environment, and then the application software on top of that. Before I go into the call of action, I also wanted to kind of reiterate some of the challenges that we saw that we think are addressed by the collaboration between Microsoft and Intel. The first one is, yes, we've talked about performance, but if you remember in that study about accounts when competitive, it wasn't just performance, but it was really how quickly can you get to productivity. So it's time to productivity. Well, one of the emphasis of Intel and Microsoft is to ease the ability of implementation, deployment, and support. It's recognizing that users in these demographics, that you have the line of business relationship and then you have the IT relationship, and those actually have to be collaborative partnerships between those two. And by having an environment that's easier to implement, deploy, and support, it actually addresses both of those issues from an IT perspective, the ability to install, deploy, and maintain, but allows the lines of business to get the types of tools necessary to solve their business problems. If I can go to the call to action, which is really some, we might be bragging a little bit here, but these are some things of some recent Intel in the news that, well, number one, it shows the importance of HPC to Intel, and it shows some of the progress that we've made. So there was an Intel Cray announcement around a new strategic collaboration. One of the tenets of that was a personal supercluster. Intel, SGI, and NASA have announced plans for the 1 and 10 petaflop environment. Intel is also at the SCO8 that was just in Austin, announced an entire software tool suite, some specifically designed around cluster software tools. One of the charts that I referenced was the threshold we've been able to maintain in the top 500. And then the Xeon 5400 is 50% of that list 1 year after. This is for the quad core that has penetrated the top 500. Within the HPC environment, 4 out of 5 CPUs are with Intel. And then we tried to give some indication of the Nehalem leadership that was specifically designed for to address some HPC-specific issues around memory bandwidth. These production systems will be available in Q1. And then at the SCO8, HPC Wire is a periodical that focuses specifically around the HPC market environment, and Intel actually received 4 editors awards and reader awards. Now, the reason I consolidate this information is, again, HPC is very important to Intel, and these are some of the benchmarks that we look to see if we're actually being successful. But the ultimate success is that end users are purchasing systems from Intel and Microsoft and actually deploying in their environment to solve some of their business challenges. Here is some areas to get more information. There are 3 there. We can provide these to you, or you can make note of them here. I think we have about 10 minutes left, and Adam, I think what we're doing here is I'd like to turn it over to you to see if we can do some polling of the participants.
Okay, certainly. Go ahead and advance there. Ladies and gentlemen, to respond to the poll, you can go ahead and click on the button to the left of the color that corresponds to your answer. The first one, which best describes your organization's current abilities regarding digital virtual prototyping and or large-scale data modeling? The polls are open. Please take a moment to respond to those. Okay, thank you. Go ahead and get to the next poll. Which best describes your current challenges related to adopting high-performance computing?
And why folks are doing that, just some of the indications on the last one, it looked like about 50% felt that their current tools were meeting their needs, which is excellent. If anything, we're hoping some of the information today, if it shows that when either you're needs change or your computing appetite grows, that you would take a look at Microsoft and Intel as a possible alternative. These are interesting, and these results here, and it kind of supports what the Council on Competitiveness talks about, is cost and budget, and then ensure and lack of software. Depending what industries the participants are coming from, at least we see some of the more mature industries in terms of industrial manufacturing, energy. We're seeing huge growth in life sciences, and some emerging environments would be document content creation and online gaming. But these are 2 of the areas that we think some of the combination of Microsoft and Intel potentially address. We could do the next polling, please, Adam.
And the final poll, which best describes your role? We have IT, non-IT, technical high-performance computing user, technical high-performance computing administrator or maintainer, or other. Okay, it looks like the majority are technical high-performance computing administrator or maintainer.
Which is excellent, because that is one of the demographics we were hoping to have participate today. We were actually trying to get to the folks who actually have some business problems, possibly in line of business that they would require solving. We do believe that there's a symbiotic connection with the IT organization in terms of those are the folks that potentially have to implement and deploy and then support, which is why we think the combination of reducing some of those inhibitors potentially allows users to take advantage of some of the high-performance computing alternatives that are out there. Thank you, Adam.
You're welcome.
So with the time remaining, which is about 8 or 10 minutes, we do have a couple of questions that are coming in. Again, this is Mark Stahl. If I could pose some of those, and Norma, by the way, if you could please come back on and join us, anticipating that there may be some relevancy to from Microsoft's perspective of some of these answers as well.
Great.
So, Norma, maybe if you're okay with one of the questions that came in from Microsoft's perspective, where does Microsoft see the growth for HPC clusters, and why do you think the growth is coming from those arenas?
Well, if I look, thanks, Mark, and the person who asked the question, what I look at across the board is that we're seeing very strong adoption in financial services, in manufacturing, public sector, both higher education and state and local government. And I think the reason why, if I break down specifically in the commercial sector, why I think we're seeing some uptake there is with the advent of desk-side clustering or departmental, folks who need to do modeling, either whether it's simulation out in the oil fields or simulations in their factories or on Wall Street where they need to work on their financial modeling, they are needing their information faster than what a traditional like workstation can do, or where they have to wait in line for on time on a larger cluster. So these folks are seeing the need to run their simulations and modeling more than just once or twice a month, but maybe once or twice or three times a week, and they find that need with clustering. So our vision, as we've stated all along, is we really are wanting and desiring to bring HPC into the mainstream, bring it much out of the closet, and let the folks who are really working day-to-day to solve real business problems take advantage of this. And we still see that as the future of it as well. And I think by our last three years that we've been working in this arena, that's what we hear from our customers, and that's what they feel they want to continue on. And the other thing, too, is one other little data point, is that why we're seeing, I think, a good progress with our product is that customers are familiar with the Windows environment. They understand it, and so they're leveraging their base Windows Server knowledge and expertise and leveraging it into the high-performance computing environment, which helps them in their day-to-day not learning a new or different operating system, but leveraging on their knowledge base that they currently have.
Thanks, Norma. If I could just follow on with that with some Intel perspectives that we're seeing as well. I liked your terminology of moving HPC into the mainstream. So if it moved down from academia and national labs and large government institutions, and they paved the way for HPC and how to use that and opened up the doors for some of the ISV applications, what we're seeing now is it's moving from these large clusters that might be within the data centers, and the requirement and the appetite is moving, if you will, further down into the organization. So it's moving down into department and work group requirements. And a very specific example would be in crash simulation. If you could do a couple more iterations of crash simulations before you send it up for a final run on a very large cluster, you potentially improve that simulation. So the ability to be able to do that within a small work group or a department to do multiple iterations on a crash simulation to improve that process before you then take that refinement and send it up to a larger cluster results in increased productivity. So this is also reflected in the statistics that IDC is seeing in terms of where the growth is. It is in the department and the work group area that those are growing in excess of about 10% compounded annual growth in those two segments. There was another question that that came up that, George, I think it might be appropriate for you. The question came up is, can you talk about the specific industries that are using HPC more intensively or effectively than others, and if you have any insights on why that may be, that could be interesting as well.
Okay. So two places where I see a lot are energy, meaning things like oil exploration and processing and things of that sort, or gas or energy extraction, let's call it, and manufacturing. And you just gave an example, for instance, from crash example there. And there are a couple of reasons. One is these are relatively mature industries in some way. They've been using computers a long time, long enough to develop a very rich software vendor ecosystem. So my expertise personally is more on the computer data engineering and manufacturing side. And 20 years ago, it was common, for instance, for each auto manufacturer to have their own crash analysis code and even their own CAD system that they developed in-house. And now there's a very rich ecosystem of software vendors that supply these. Similar things have happened in energy a little later, but it's happened now, and there's, again, a big ecosystem of suppliers. Also, the algorithms that are used for these things have gotten very good and amazingly accurate. In the areas of crash analysis, it's now possible to analyze the behavior of multiple vehicles crashing in ways that you would not even begin to be able to test in a live environment, things like rollovers and things of that sort. This does two things, being able to do this. Not only does it let customers solve problems more quickly, but in some cases, it also lets them solve more complex problems or problems that they could never just create models for, physical models for, and deal with. And just to give an idea of the progression, consider the Wright brothers back in 1903 or thereabouts when they built the Wright Flyer. The reason that they were able to do what no one else had really done before, which is make a powered airplane that actually worked and did something useful, was primarily because they went through a lot of physical testing. They used wind tunnels. They tuned their airfoils and their propellers and wind tunnels for efficiency as best they could. And they got the thing to work. Now compare that to with a Boeing 777, which was, I believe, the first commercial airliner designed completely on computers and completely simulated on computers. It's just too complex to do that way. There's no way Boeing could have built that plane, could have designed that plane without using computer-aided engineering to do it. And there are lots and lots of things. So as we get more and more complex products, we need more and more computers to help us design them. And in fact, this summer I actually did some research and plotted the complexity of computer-aided engineering models, the growth of those models over time, and discovered that it pretty much tracks the growth of compute power. So if you've heard of Moore's Law that suggests that the available compute power roughly doubles every 18 months or so, it turns out that the use of that compute model in the high-performance computing for manufacturing follows that almost exactly.
Thanks, George. Getting close to a wrap-up, I just wanted to make a couple of comments on what industries are using HPC. What we're finding is not only is HPC being pushed down into organizations that have already used HPC, it's also being pushed up from either workstations or desktops that are finding that their business challenges have more computing appetite to solve than they can do in their workstations. So those are two dynamics that are going on, one being pushed down in the organization, the other one is being pushed up from workstations or desktops. The other thing is that we're finding some traditional ISV applications that were used in very scientific environments, that, as George talked about, building an airplane or simulating crashing a car. Two of those applications, crash simulation or fluid dynamics, are being applied in commercial industries that maybe people hadn't thought of before. So, for example, Procter & Gamble, they use crash simulation to create simulated bottles or containers for their fluids or their dry goods, and then dropping them as they would fall off a consumer shelf to make sure that the design that they're doing for the container can withstand the certain stresses of falling. Now, what that means is they used to have to build those things physically. Now they can do it by simulation. They also use fluid dynamics to in their manufacturing process to actually load the fluids or deposit the fluids into the containers at the optimum environment so they can move the manufacturing line smoothly and effectively.
Mark?
Yes.
I want to throw in one more example from Procter & Gamble just because it blew my mind when I saw it. And this was from a presentation that they gave. They actually do aerodynamic studies of snack foods like Pringles chips because they make so many, their production lines move so fast, they need to keep them from flying off the line and flying about the factory.
That's a great one. And I'm going to tie back closing this off in that the theme was HPC for the masses. And one of the reasons that these commercial entities are able to take HPC and push it further in their organization is to address some of these perceptions. One was price. If you combine Microsoft and Intel, you're actually getting the advantages of manufacturing at volume and getting some price capability for that. So I think that the theme is very relevant. I also think that the usage models, as is price point and capability of performance continues to improve, will continue to see some very innovative usage models, and a lot of those won't be dictated or suggested by Intel or Microsoft, but rather come from our user community and how they want to apply innovative HPC environments to their own business problems. And Adam, with that, if I may turn that back to you, but before I do that, on behalf of Intel and Microsoft, I wanted to thank all the participants for dedicating an hour of your time to participate with us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's live meeting. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.